This is the Outsource Accelerator Podcast, exploring business and outsourcing mastery. Let's do it.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Outsource Accelerator Podcast. My name is Derek Gallimore, and today this is episode number 119. Today we're joined by Neville Samuels of Virtual Staff 365. That is, as it says on the label, a virtual staff outsourcing solutions provider. So Neville has a great business background and has been involved in outsourcing about as long as I have, actually. So we have a great conversation about our varying experiences. I will leave you to it. We obviously introduce Neville in this episode, so I hope you enjoy. If you want any of the show notes, then go to outsourceaccelerator.com/119. Enjoy. Okay, welcome back, everybody. I am lucky today to be joined by Neville Samuels of,
Virtual Staff. Virtual Staff 365.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. Today, I'm super excited to be joined by Neville Samuels of Virtual Staff 365. Hi, Neville. How are you?
Hi, Derek. Very good, thanks. Hi, listeners. It's great to be here today.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. And Neville, as the name might indicate, owns a company called Virtual Staff 365. And today we're going to deep dive, we're going to look at Neville's kind of business background and what's brought him to working within the outsourcing industry. I've had a chat to Neville, and there's a lot of interesting kind of learnings here. So I'm sure whether you are looking to use his services or not, then there's certainly a lot we can get from this conversation. So Neville, thanks again for joining us. And I suppose, initially, do you just want to give us a quick introduction to who you are and what Virtual Staff 365 is?
Sure. I've been in Australia since 1994. I qualified as a chartered accountant back in South Africa, got married, my wife and I came straight over to Australia. So I've been here 23 years. I've been working with virtual staff and offshore teams since 2009. And 2 years ago, I started Virtual Staff 365 essentially to help give people their time back, which usually results in them using their time to get more work done. The business is a virtual staffing business, as it's named, and we help our clients recruit, onboard, and retain great virtual staff. Mainly, our focus is in the Philippines, but not solely.
Fantastic. And so you're already a bit of an international guy. You've come from South Africa, and you're in Australia, and you're now dealing a lot with the Philippines. And also, it's no coincidence that South Africa is quite a prominent outsourcing destination as well.
We can get into that at some point. We're
doing some work there, but it's not my focus.
The focus of virtual staff is the Philippines for quite a few reasons. South Africa is not there yet in terms of virtual staffing, but it's certainly an up-and-coming. It's a bit of a rising star in terms of BPOs and outsourcing. And deeper into our conversation, Derek, I'll be happy to tell you what we're doing in South Africa as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And so tell me a little bit about your background. I know that you've been involved in business and commerce generally. What is the genesis of your involvement with outsourcing?
Right. I worked as a chartered accountant in Australia till 2005. And in 2005, I bought my first business, which I sold and exited in 2009. It was then that I bought, along with a partner, a small business in e-commerce. We kind of saw the market of online retail. We saw it as something that was going to really boom and take off. And we bought a small little business that sold video games. Mm-hmm. And it sold video games on eBay. And my responsibility was the operational side of the business, which included customer service. My partner's role was very much the IT and the buying and sourcing of the product. And I had to answer customer service emails. And video game buyers who buy their video games online, they're very passionate individuals. And for every one game that we might sell, we might get 2 to 3, maybe even 3 to 4 emails from the consumer asking questions, whether it's about the product or about the logistics, when's it going to ship, is he going to get it yesterday, those sorts of questions. I had to answer those emails, and that was, it was almost the beginning of the end because I was answering 50 emails probably every 4 to 5 hours. If I didn't answer those emails, 4 hours later, there'd be another 50 emails in the inbox. It literally just kept flowing. When I woke up in the morning, I had to answer 50 emails before I actually got in the car and went to the office. And this went on for about 6 to 9 months. And then my partner said to me, Neville, get yourself a virtual assistant. And I didn't actually, it was the first time I was introduced to the concept. I didn't actually know what it was and did a little bit of research. Eventually, we employed a VA to help me based in India. And it took about, I thought it was going to take about 3 months. It took about 2 to 3 weeks.
And to get them up to speed?
To get him up to speed, and he actually took over. He took over the customer service. I didn't have to worry about my weekends because on Monday morning, he would come in. He'd answer the first 300 to 400 emails. He'd get them done. He might have even logged in on the weekends to answer his emails so that he had an easier Monday. But that was my introduction.
And it really is quite life-changing, isn't it, in terms of how liberating it is. And you know, I mean, part of it is the fact that you're outsourcing and that's great and it's affordable. But also, I suppose, you know, the kind of nascent scaling of a business so that you can leverage your time better and do higher value add activities instead of being tied to the email inbox. Yeah,
it's really interesting, that concept, because from the time that I was able to free myself up from that particular role in the e-commerce business, and for anyone who's a video game, a gamer who's bought games online, our business was called Dungeon Crawl. It's the biggest seller of games on eBay, and there were times when it was just completely out of control. But what it did was it actually allowed us to open up other online retail businesses. We ended up opening up a tool site that sold power tools that we imported from the US and China. We ended up opening an UGG boot store because the opportunity presented to us, but we had the ability to scale up from the time that we started taking on and using virtual assistants.
And do you really put it down to that? So you sort of put down 100%. Your ability to scale because of your access to this resource, yeah?
100%. And my partner would agree with that. We had different VAs, full-time employed by our business, doing different things that allowed us to scale. I'll give you an example. We've got a container load of product coming in from China or the US, and we have to get that product online. And to get that product online and to comply with eBay's requirements when listing product, there was a huge amount of data that had to get entered into the system. The only thing you need to do is you need to have time.
Sure.
It also allowed us to get the photographs directly from our suppliers and hand it over to our graphic designer, our in-house graphic designer, who was working in the Philippines, to actually enhance those images and make them e-commerce ready, for want of a better term.
It seems then that, you know, you got this first chappie in India, and then it just kind of everything clicked and it all fit in place, and then you were just kind of adding as many staff as you could, as quickly as you could? It becomes a bit of an addiction, doesn't it?
Well, it is. It only really clicked when we left India and went to the Philippines.
Right.
That's when things started to change for us.
So what year was your first Indian
outsource? 2009, and we started in the Philippines in about 2000, probably late 2010, 2011. I don't have the exact dates, but the Philippines was where we really were able to scale. We had structural problems in India. The staff were fantastic. We went through an agency. And to tell you the truth, the biggest the problem was that when we gave these guys a bonus or an increase, we never heard from them. Nothing. It was radio silence. It was just business as usual. And one day I said to one of the guys, I said, Shabba, I've sent you an increase, or I don't know if it was an I gave them an increase or a bonus. Right. You haven't said thank you. What happened? He said to me, in their contract for the first 2 years, any bonus or increase that is provided by the client goes to the agency, doesn't go to the staff.
Yeah.
And that actually killed it for us. That left a very bitter taste in our mouths.
It just shows an immense kind of short-sightedness, doesn't it? You know, like you and unfortunately, you know, I don't want to get to typecasting, but very commonly in the developing nations, you get this tendency to look at short-term gains instead of kind of building a long, successful relationship, don't you? And so that's what you notice within your.
Well, that's right. That's quite right. And what actually happened when we went over to the Philippines, we just got a sense that they understood what we were trying to achieve. It was a much better experience for us. We were able to source great staff. And we had guys doing lots of different things for us. So one of the things in the video game industry is release dates of product is critical to sales. Because when Call of Duty, a new game, is coming out, everyone wants it at that time. We would have we had one VA who was essentially he was a VA to our buying manager of the video game business, and he was scouring the internet for news. That's what he did. He scoured the internet. He updated new release schedules. He kept our buyer informed all the time of what was going on.
Mm.
We had data entry guys that were skilled at creating new listings for us the way we wanted the new listings created. And what did that mean? It meant that my partner and I could go out and we could forge relationships that would help us sell more. For example, by providing drop shipping solutions to other businesses or tapping into other marketplaces. You know, suddenly we're selling on Trade Me in New Zealand, we're selling in Amazon in the US. Yeah, all these sorts of things we were only able to do because of the guys that we were employing.
Now, so you're really leveraging your time and you're doing the high value stuff, but also then you're affording space so that you can go into new markets and you can basically penetrate new revenues and new markets. Yeah. It's fascinating, isn't it? And because, you know, there's a lot of fear and apprehension about outsourcing within whatever the home countries, and that it takes away jobs. But actually, it enables better growth, better prosperity for companies so that they can pay more taxes, they can hire more people, they can expand more. And it really is a win-win for all, isn't it?
Well, it is, and it's again, it comes to the short-sightedness when people say you're taking jobs offshore, you're taking it away from Australia. What it actually did was it actually made our business for that period of time more robust, gave us more opportunities. We had to employ more people in our warehouse to ship out more goods. We couldn't have done that without those people. And I've even got examples with my clients. I've got one client that employs VAs in the Philippines doing lead generation.
Mm.
Now, lead generation means different things to every business. But essentially, because of the lead generators that they've got in the Philippines, they need more people in Australia to make the calls. And they need more BDMs in Australia to actually go out and see all these leads. Not all the leads are willing to see these guys, but they're making a whole lot more appointments because they've got a whole lot more leads. So they need more BDMs to front up to the appointments. So it definitely can and does make businesses stronger and more robust in Australia.
Yeah.
There's another side to that people seem to forget. And everyone seems to forget the little man, the small business, the mom and pop shop working somewhere in Australia trying to pay the bills. Now, we all know that Telstra outsources to the Philippines. We all know that we read the papers, we hear that Qantas are moving another 300 people to Malaysia or wherever. But no one actually thinks about the smaller guys. How are they supposed to compete with the corporates that have got not just teams in the Philippines? You just walk down a yellow avenue in Makati and you see the names of these businesses. Macquarie Bank is high up on one of the buildings. AXA Insurance.
Yeah.
You see them there. How is the small guy supposed to compete? And that's my market. My market is helping small to medium-sized business find more time so they can do whatever they want with that time, whether it's grow their business or go and play golf.
And it's really critical, isn't it? Because I'm trying to get this message through as well. I mean, obviously, I focus on the SMEs in the West as well. And outsourcing has been happening in the multinational conglomerate, you know, the big boys league for 25, 30 years now. And, you know, it's like hedge funds used to be only accessible to the elite billionaires. It's like, you know, a lot of tax dodging is only available to the big corporates. And, you know, outsourcing also was too. And I think now that technology is enabling more democratized access to outsourcing, we're getting a turning of the tides. And all of, you know, I mean, you see Donald Trump suggesting that people shouldn't now outsource, yet his companies have been outsourcing for 25 years. And there's kind of like this mentality, I think, of the big boys have been doing it for a long time. But now that everyone's getting into it, people are saying, no, we shouldn't. We shouldn't really allow this. It's sort of been such a standard process for the big companies for so long. And what I'm trying to say to the SMEs out there is that this thing is real, and this thing is probably one of the biggest transformative tools that you can use for your business. And it really needs to be considered. Yeah, it's incredible that people still overlook it.
Well, I'm actually finding more and more people understand what I do when I tell them. So, you know, in 2009, when I was introduced to the concept, I had no idea what it was. And my previous business was an online business that sold SMS text messages. So I was involved in essentially IT and a high-tech industry, but I knew nothing about this. Whereas now, in 2017, going into 2018, and everyone I talk to, when someone says, what do you do? And I tell them, their eyes open up and they get quite excited by the idea. They either tell me they know someone who's doing it, or they think it's fantastic, or they want to know a bit more. How do you do it? What is your secret sauce?
Yeah, it's kind of on trend at the moment. I think it's finally getting to the point where there's at least kind of low-grade awareness, isn't there? And so people are eager to hear a little bit more. But, you know, we've done a white paper actually on this, and across kind of 10 primary English-speaking Western countries, there's about 100 million SMEs. So, 35 million SMEs that employ about 100 million people. And, you know, very clearly just from those numbers, I would suggest only kind of 1% of them would be outsourcing, if that. You know, there's still a huge long way to go, isn't there, both in terms of awareness and active adoption, I think.
There is a long way to go, but also I think we're also fortunate. We've got a whole new wave of new generation of young guys coming into business that have their eyes open. They're a completely different generation. And they look at the way things are doing, and they're happy to embrace anything that's new. So I think the future's bright for outsourcing. I think the world's getting smaller.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I mean, it's actually getting easier to do, and I think it's more accepted, more widely accepted.
Yeah, it's really becoming one marketplace now, isn't it? And I think, you know, our generation or the last generation, it was, you know, you're from Australia, so you do business in Australia with Australians. Whereas now, the kind of youth, they're trading off, they're learning from platforms like YouTube and, I don't know, the internet. Like, there really is no borders anymore, is there? You know, they're buying from Amazon from across the world. And it's really becoming quite irrelevant where people are sitting.
Yes. I'll tell you an interesting thing, Derek. If I knew then, before I sold my first business, which was an SMS text message business, if I knew then what I know now about what the possibilities were with outsourcing, I probably would have never have sold that business.
Right, because you could have
I could have done things with that business that I didn't think at the time was possible. And in my mind, it wasn't possible. But in actual fact, had I known someone like myself and been able to pick up the phone and phone myself in the future and say, Neville, how would you do this? These are my hurdles. These are my pain points. I would have said, well, let's build up a team for you. Let's build up a team for you offshore. Let's find the right place, build up a team, and we manage that business that way.
Absolutely. Because it's
So
not,
it
you know,
really.
we preach this as well. It's not just cost savings. I mean, you do get the cost savings, but it's actually the rocket fuel to your business, isn't it? You know, it is the lead gen that you can now afford. It's the new business development. It's the new markets that you can, you know, dive into. There's so many opportunities when you have better access to more affordable resource.
It's partly affordability, but it's not only affordability. I've got one particular client who has got eight tech support people here in Australia. He pays them between $80,000 and $100,000 a year, and he just can't find the right guys to do the job. He says it's just not possible. He wanted to bring guys in with a 457 visa. That's tightening. He's having real problems sourcing people that can do exactly what it is he needs them to do. And it's all around hardware and software and customer service, tech support. He's absolutely struggling. So what's his option? He's now come to me and he said to me, Neville, we need to build up a team that can support my Australian team because my Australian guys are overworked and under-resourced, and I need to give them support. And I said to him, I said to the client, I said, what is the driving factor? What are you trying to achieve here? Are you trying to save money? He said, no. He's not trying to save money. He's trying to just provide additional support to his team so that when his customers call in with support queries, he can give great customer service and great support to his current clients, which he's struggling to do. So in his case, it's actually more about knowledge. It's more about having the right people that have got the knowledge and the ability to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I find with outsourcing as well is, you know, it's really just employment, and it's really just forgetting about where they're sitting, and you hire people now based on meritocracy, which includes the cost of that service, you know, within the meritocracy kind of ranking. And you know, people that are still sitting in Sydney looking at their local geographic pool to fulfill their needs, they're really limiting themselves when there's another probably 1 billion qualified or capable people on the planet that people aren't considering because they're not within the geographic borders of whatever town people are sitting in. And you know, there's huge power there, isn't there, when you can kind of suddenly open up your job canvassing to another 1 or 2 billion people kind of thing.
Well, you'd be amazed. You're absolutely right. And I also think, I think maybe the co-working space or the move to co-working space in Australia and elsewhere is actually helping educate businesses that in actual fact, location, geographical location is not critical to getting the work done. But I think there's a long way to still go. I've got one client that's got they've got three staff with through me, of which two are geographically located somewhere in the Philippines, nowhere near each other. And the third, his role is so critical, they've got him in a BPO in the Philippines because his work requires him to be essentially BPO based. Whereas the other two, they work from home, they're virtual staff. So he's kind of learned, that particular client has learned that they can have staff anywhere as long as the guys can do the work. It doesn't matter where they are.
Yeah, absolutely. Now there's incredible kind of evolution to this, isn't there? And it's all just positive, you know. And it's such a fantastic kind of sector to work in because it's just almost miracles happen, doesn't it? You know, so incredible.
Well, the exciting part is when you introduce the concept to a client and it works. It doesn't always work for everyone. And I'm actually at great pains to tell people it doesn't always work for people. Some businesses think it's a great idea because they do see the dollar savings, but sometimes it's just not right for them. But when it is right for them and it just opens up a whole new world to them, there's no better feeling than a client that suddenly sees what opportunities they have in front of them because of it. And that's the rewarding part.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. It really is like quite an exciting sector, you know. And when you see people really kind of click and it works for them, and they have great staff for, you know, not a lot of money, it's really quite exciting. So, Neville, you're another guy that has, you know, you started in outsourcing to scratch your own itch then, and then you moved into, you know, into the industry yourself, and you now have a sort of successful and thriving business within the industry. I want to get you back and on another podcast episode coming up soon to dive into that, because it's a common path, I think, that a lot of people take because outsourcing is so compelling. So again, that is Virtual Staff 365, and I really look forward to talking to you again about that. If people want to get in touch with you, Neville, in the meantime, to discuss anything, or go and see your website, how do they do that?
So the website is www.virtualstaff365.com.au. My email is Neville, N-E-V-I-L-L-E, at virtualstaff365.com.au. Or you can call me on 0402 116606.
Fantastic. And that's Australia, of course. And, of course, I will put all of these contact details in the show notes. So thanks so much, Neville, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks, Derek. Thanks, everyone.
Okay, that was Neville Samuels of Virtual Staff 365. If you want to get in touch with Neville or you want to know anything about this episode, then go to our show notes at outsourceaccelerator.com/119. And if you want to ask us anything or get in touch, then please just email us at ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.